Thank you so much, Stephanie, for being with me today on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. You're my 69th guest, and you're a distant relative of mine.
Based on all of the O's in our names.
Yes, absolutely. The O's are what people can readily see and know exactly what we're talking about, that we're very much related. But when you think of relationship building in a team environment, Stephanie, what does it mean to you? You were at KC24 for 42 years and you anchored there for nearly 40. Would love to hear what relationship building meant to your professional career.
Well, working in a newsroom, it's not even possible to do that job successfully without working as a team. Obviously, there's a huge team involved in putting a newscast together. So it's the producers, it's the assignment desk people, it's the reporters, it's the anchors. We all have to work together to, you know, put out our newscast, our product on a daily basis. It'd be impossible to do that solo. So for all the years that I worked for KC24, the team aspect was a very important part of the process.
And what did you love the most about anchoring and reporting? And tell me about when you got your start there. You were telling me offline that the first couple of years you were a trainee or just doing other assignment related activities before you started being in front of the camera. So tell me about those early days, and you've seen so much growth in our industry, especially at the local news level, for over four decades.
Well, obviously, I would say, yeah, I guess you could call it growth in the industry, but just changes in the industry. When I first started working in the newsroom at KC24, we were still typing on typewriters. Granted, they were electric typewriters, but it was pre-computer. So every script had to be typed on paper, and we had script packets. So there was such an evolution in terms of technology, the role of women in broadcasting, and certainly the industry continues to evolve. We see so many changes, you know, just in the current era. But I started out fresh out of college, very green. I was lucky, you know, just wanted to get into broadcasting in some fashion. I never expected to work on the air. That wasn't my ultimate goal. I just wanted to work in a newsroom. I had a degree in radio, television, broadcasting, and I was hired as a writer, reporter trainee at the NBC affiliate in Fresno. So I really, it was good because I didn't have much of a foundation. I had worked in radio for a year, but radio is a lot different than television, obviously. So the first year that I was at the station, it was really about learning how to be a reporter, learning about, you know, learning in school is different than actually hands-on learning as a professional. So there was that adjustment. And I had a lot of very kind, interested, seasoned reporters that, you know, again, going back to that team type situation, they helped me. They took me on and mentored me and really showed me how to do the job properly. And so I think the whole team aspect of that profession was instrumental in helping me develop my career. If someone hadn't helped me and taken me in as a team member, I wouldn't have been able to succeed and continue to grow as a journalist. So I started out as a writer. I was eventually promoted to producer. And at a certain point, I was anchoring and producing and reporting just simultaneously. And I was fortunate to be able to work in my hometown and progress in my career. You know, it was very satisfying and it was a great career. And obviously now I'm retired almost a year. It's almost a year, but I look back at that experiences I had as just wonderful.
And do you miss it? I mean, I know that you said you've just been retired for not too long, just about a year or so. So do you miss being in the action of being on the anchor desk and working with your colleagues in the station? Or did you feel that after 42 years that you were just ready for other opportunities or just spend more time with family and just, you know, relax after such an amazing, exceptional career?
All of the above, I guess. Of course, I miss working with my coworkers and being a part of the team. I miss having all the information at my disposal. I felt very informed. There was, you know, obviously constant information coming into the newsroom, whether it was local events that were happening or, you know, local news stories. I miss having the exposure to all of that information. That was very invigorating. I enjoyed working in the team environment with a co-anchor and my fellow, you know, reporters and all. So I do miss that. But I would say that after 42 years, I also was ready for a more normal life. Working in television news on the local level, you know, it's 365 days a year. Our newsroom operated 24 hours a day. The bulk of my career was working the swing shift from 2:30 p.m. till 11:30 p.m. And, you know, that wears on you after a while. And working holidays and all of that, I was ready for a more normal life. And I was just ready for, yeah, to take a break. I think I enjoyed what I was doing. I had so many incredible experiences working in that career, but I was ready to just say goodbye. I was fulfilled and I felt like it was time for me to just move on. I wasn't forced out in any way. I could have continued doing the job, but I just knew in my heart that it was time to say goodbye. And so I've been really at peace with that decision since the day that I made that decision and since the day that I signed off for the final time. It's hard to explain, but I haven't looked back and had regrets about my decision. And after 42 years, you know, it was enough.
I think you made a great decision and I'm so glad that you're at peace with it. And a lot of people, you know, who retire, the majority of them are at peace with their decision. And then some others, they think, you know, well, maybe I do have some years ahead of me and maybe I want to rethink my decision. But the vast majority of people know when they're ready for their next great challenges or interests, hobbies, if you will. Mm-hmm. When you think of your career, who were your mentors? Talk to me about some of the colleagues you worked with that you looked up to, that you admired in terms of, you know, their professional careers. I mean, when you started, I'm sure there were people, as you had mentioned, people that took you under their wing. And interestingly enough, two of my other guests, Mike Hill and Wisdom Martin, worked with you at KC24. Mike Hill has been a friend of mine for 14 years. I met him when I worked at ESPN. And Wisdom, when we connected on LinkedIn, he said, you wouldn't by any chance be related to Stephanie Berusian. And that's how that conversation started. And, you know, he couldn't believe, and we're of the mindset, you know, especially being in journalism, you believe in 6 degrees of separation. So Wisdom, someone who I've only gotten to know so far in the past month, but Mike, I've known for 14 years, but both worked around the same time together. And when they worked with you, they had all wonderful things to say about
Thank goodness.
So tell me about your memories that you remember with Wisdom and Mike and just anyone else you'd like to share with our audience, like who made your life as an anchor, reporter, that much better, you know, having worked with them.
You know, it's a very, anyone that has worked in television news knows that it's a very nomadic type of position. I'm an anomaly in that I stayed at the same station for 42 years. That's, I guess, unusual in the career that I chose. So many people moved to the Fresno market, you know, from maybe a smaller market. They spent a few years in Fresno and then moved on to something else. In the case of, you know, certainly that was the case for Wisdom and Mike, and they were great coworkers. I had so many people that I, through the years, made connections with that I really enjoyed working with. Some I worked closely with as my co-anchor. Obviously, that's a very close working relationship. Those were, you know, great relationships. I enjoyed all of the people that I work with. In terms of mentors, I mean, this is kind of interesting. When I first started anchoring, I was assigned to do the morning cut-ins during the Today Show. There were a couple of 5-minute news segments that we would do locally that would be inserted into the Today Show, and I was working that morning shift. And so I guess I would say that my mentor at the time, the woman who was anchoring the Today Show at the time, was Jane Pauley. And I always really admired her. I thought she was great at her job. I knew that she, she was married and she had children, and she seemed to balance all of that. And so I always really admired her. I guess I would consider her a mentor. And at a certain point, I did get to meet her because a couple times during my career, I think when stations had bigger budgets and maybe the networks had bigger budgets, they, as an NBC affiliate, we had the opportunity to actually travel to New York and shoot promos with some of the network anchors. I had the opportunity to do that with Tom Brokaw, Brian Williams, when he was the nightly news anchor. And I had the chance to go and shoot promos with Jane Pauley and Stone Phillips, because they were the Dateline anchors at the time that I got to go. So I had the chance to meet her and actually do an interview with her. And that was actually a really highlight and exciting moment for me, because she was someone I looked up to so much. And to actually sit down and be able to interview her and meet her and talk to her in a casual way was very exciting for me. And she was wonderful. She was very, very kind. So that was definitely a highlight for me to actually meet my mentor.
And that's really extraordinary. I mean, many people, they get to meet their mentors, and before they get to meet them, if this, in your case, where you hadn't met her prior, but when you had the chance to meet her, it's like you're having a real conversation with her and you get to step in their world and they step into your world. Care to share any things that stand out to you from those conversations? Or was it just overall just a good feeling many years later, thinking back like, wow, that was just extraordinary that you had the opportunity to have that FaceTime?
I think looking back, it was extraordinary. And I just recently have the interview that I did with her on tape and just recently watched it. And I know one of the things I asked her about was about the role of women. And granted, she wasn't the first woman to do that job, but early on, I think women really had to struggle to have a place and be accepted in their position. And I know there were challenges for me I was pretty young, obviously, when I started my job, and to be accepted and considered an equal to some of the older, gentlemen that I work with, there were struggles with that. And that was something that I asked her about, and, she eloquently answered. But so that was an important question, I think, for me to ask of her. And I do remember at the end of the interview, and this wasn't a taped portion, but we did sit there and have this conversation. It probably was about a 6-7 minute interview. After we were done recording, she said, "Wow, you didn't have any notes or anything. You're very good." And honestly, I had all the questions that I wanted to ask her in my mind, and the interview went well. And I remember feeling very proud that she complimented my interviewing skills, because she certainly was a skilled journalist. And so it made me feel good. I don't know if she sincerely meant that, but I took it as a great compliment.
Well, I'm sure she meant it very genuinely.
I hope so. It made me feel good.
Yeah, I'm so happy to hear that, because those type of interactions like stick with you for the rest of your life. It's always a good feeling knowing that, wow, someone of her caliber and being in the tops of her profession, you being in the tops of your profession, a more national figure and you being a more localized figure to Fresno. But nonetheless, I mean, journalists who are local or national, and if they have the opportunity to do international reporting, corresponding, anchoring, the same skills, the same journalistic integrity, the preparation, the way you approach your job. And again, it's all about relationship building, that it's pretty neat to be able to build those relationships in ways that you never thought were possible until you get on into your career, get further along in your career, and those opportunities present themselves. I'm so glad you had that opportunity.
Yeah, it was exciting.
That's great. And when you think of your family life and your husband and your two kids and, you know, the sacrifices of being, you know, an anchor and being a 24-hour, 7 days a week news cycle, especially as your career progressed, you know, the work-life balance, and then to be able to, you know, raise a family, you know, tell me about your love for motherhood, or just raising your family, and then you're having the support of your husband, and, you know, just being that figure in your household who's on the news every day, which is not an everyday job that people typically have. So what was that like as you were raising a young family and, you know, you and your husband were trying to, you know, have a work-life balance?
Yeah, there were challenges because, as I explained, I worked the night shift and my husband worked a day shift. So it worked out well having, you know, our kids and being able to raise them, because they obviously, we had to have help with our childcare, but it wasn't full-time help because he was home at night with them and I could be home with them, especially when they were young before they went to school during the day. But I think part of the reason why we chose to stay in the Fresno area, I think initially when I got into broadcasting, I had dreams of obviously moving to a bigger market, but being from Fresno and I had family here in the Fresno area, certainly they stepped in and helped us with childcare. And I don't know how we could have done it otherwise. You really do have to have support to work crazy schedules like we worked. But certainly there were sacrifices that I made and my family made because of my schedule. Again, it was working holidays sometimes when I didn't want to work on a holiday, but, you know, you have to take turns with coworkers on some of that stuff. And there were things that maybe my kids were involved in school that I couldn't be there, but my husband could, or I would come late on my dinner break and kind of join midstream at some of the, you know, school evening programs. So it was a definite juggling act, and there were frustrations that, you know, were certainly a part of that, but we did the best we could. But, you know, I didn't miss much, but yeah, it definitely, my job created challenges, but there were also benefits to it as well. So we did the best we could and we got through it.
Well, I'm sure you did an amazing job. And
I tried.
Yes. And obviously we're connected through social media, and we connected many years ago when we determined that we're related on my father's side, and I would imagine your father's side. And
yeah,
you know, you have the extra O in your last name, because when our family came through Ellis Island, an extra O was added to the family members who eventually, like you or your parents and grandparents, made it to California. And my family stayed in the Northeast, but we have that common denominator of New Jersey and having a presence
right
in New Jersey.
Exactly. That's where my dad's family initially settled. So we have to be related.
We are. I remember when you and I first had the conversation many years ago, I was able to do some research online and, you know, figure out a family tree. And I'm like, okay, we're related. Here's how we're related, Stephanie. And then we went through it line by line. I was going through the family tree, and I think we determined more specifically, I know we're being a little bit more broad because some years have passed by, but I remember having that specific conversation with you. And I'm so glad that we could interview and have you on my podcast. Going back to, you know, female empowerment and what it means to be a woman in the media business, and, you know, looking at Jane Pauley's career and other women's careers, it's interesting because one of my previous guests, Gail Sarans, who for many years, she was with the NBC affiliate in Tampa, Florida, and she was the first woman play-by-play broadcaster for an NFL regular season game. And so it is interesting, whether it's your story or Gail's story or other women's stories in our profession, you know, where they were able to, like you, find a place and make a mark and, you know, be able to really stand out in your community and make Fresno proud. And when you think of 42 years, I mean, that just speaks to your credibility, your integrity, you know, hard work, being beloved in Fresno and having the support at your station. They knew that you were a team player, and I'm sure you made a lot of relationships or people who would tune in, watch your programming at night. Any interesting people that you met in the community or friendships you made? Did people often, you know, stop in the grocery store or at the bank and say, hey, I saw your news broadcast last night? I mean, that typically is what I get from local journalists, those interesting stories.
You know, that has certainly happened throughout my career. And even some people, you know, still think I'm working. People maybe don't tune in to the newscast, you know, on a regular basis. Obviously, TV news viewing is shifting away from TV. And so, or people will say, you know, now that they miss seeing me on television, which is nice and kind. It, you know, makes me feel good. But I guess there were moments in my career where things happened, where I was able to meet people that had a tremendous impact on the course of my career. One significant project that I was involved in was the Buddy Check 24 program, which was a breast cancer awareness program that I introduced locally almost 30 years ago. I didn't create the program. It was actually created by a reporter in Jacksonville, Florida, but it was brought to our station. And so through my involvement in Buddy Check and covering breast cancer related stories for so many years, I met so many incredible women and men who shared, you know, their cancer journey, I guess, with me. And so those stories really had a tremendous impact on me, just the incredible, brave people that I had the opportunity to interview. But also, I guess another important encounter for me was, we do have an honorary consul of Armenia in Fresno. And through my connections with Berish Apkarian, who's the honorary consul here, that opened the door. And other people as well. I've had the opportunity to travel to Armenia many times with Berish and his group to go travel with them. They do a medical mission every year, but also through some other organizations and through connections I made with other people, I had the opportunity to travel to Armenia many times. And those were wonderful opportunities for me because we do have a large Armenian population in Fresno. And it was so interesting to see the connections between our Fresno and Central Valley community and the country of Armenia. There were so many connections. One important one being William Saroyan, the late William Saroyan, playwright and award-winning author who was born in Fresno, and how revered he is in Armenia. And that, of course, was a huge connection. But there are so many others. And so it was just a great opportunity and pleasure for me to, through my connections with people, to have those experiences have meant a lot to me,
Of course, I'm so glad you bring up Fresno. And I first went to Fresno in 2009. And, you know, being originally from the East Coast, born in New Jersey, grew up in Florida, it was my first time in California. And one of my friends at the time, at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, we were friends in college. He had came all the way from California. So I visited him out there, met his family. We traveled through Yosemite National Park visiting. We went to San Francisco. He was just giving me a tour of his home state. And I remember spending a lot of time in Fresno. And I loved the fact that William Saroyan is such a part of the fabric of Fresno. And you and I being fellow Armenians, I did a book report on William Saroyan back in high school. So I studied up all about him. And to just go to Fresno and see, I think we went to, you know, a cemetery of all places, just because my friend knew where a lot of the you know, notable Armenians or people who are laid to rest. And, you know, I like history. So just to see all the different Armenians who had settled there and learned about them, and for you to speak about Fresno, your hometown, and how William Saroyan is probably the most notable, and you're pretty notable too, but in terms
well,
of...
Well, not... No, I think he's a little bit more.
Yeah, notable. Exactly. But notable in his profession, he really was somebody that people look to for inspiration, and people look to for just wanting to emulate him and emulate, you know, everything that he accomplished as a playwright, an author, and somebody who, from a literary perspective, just was one of the greats. And okay. For you to talk about, you know, going to Armenia, you know, many times, and going on mission trips, and, you know, befriending a lot of fellow Armenians. And yes, you make the point that Fresno has a strong, close-knit, long-standing Armenian population. And so does Glendale, just outside of Los Angeles, so just a little bit south of you. Talk about you as a proud Armenian. What does it mean to you to be Armenian, to know our history, everything about the Armenian genocide, but even just fast forward all the successful Armenians. I mean, there's Andre Agassi, there's Cher, there's Kirkorian, Ross Bagdasarian. I mean, the list goes on and on. I know people mention the Kardashians, but they're more modern. But I'm talking about the Armenians that, you know, really in the 20th century, you know, made their mark on society. So were there other Armenians that you looked at as well, where who you admired or that you looked as a mentor from afar or just as a role model?
What's interesting for me is obviously, you know, I'm full-blooded Armenian, and certainly I embraced my culture. My family certainly did. But I think it was when I started to go to Armenia, which I think my first trip probably was about 15 years ago. I think I really started really understanding the importance of the connection to my culture. And I learned more about the history once I started to go there. And it's unfortunate that, you know, my grandparents obviously are no longer still around, and even my parents are gone. I wish that as a younger person, I had thought about talking more to my grandparents about what they endured, you know, when they came here. Their stories are so interesting. And I, thankfully, one of my cousins and even my brother did do interviews with my grandparents. So I have those written interviews. And I also have some letters that my maternal grandfather, my mother's father, moved to the United States before the genocide. And he came as a very young man, kind of to pave the way for maybe his family to move here at some point, because things were starting to become, you know, difficult where his family lived, which, you know, was in Samsun, near the port city of Samsun, which was part of Turkey, obviously, at that time. And so, but he saved letters that he received from his family while he was a young man struggling and living in Fresno and trying to establish himself here. So one of my cousins had those letters translated. And it's something that I really do cherish, because it really does kind of tell the story of what was happening leading up to the genocide, reading those letters. So it really was later in my life that I really understood what my family had endured. And like I said, I wish as a younger person, I paid more attention to those things. I loved my grandparents, and they were great, you know, people, and spoke broken English because, you know, they're obviously, you know, they learned after they moved here how to speak the language. But I didn't ask them enough about what had happened to them. I do have these written accounts from, you know, my cousin and my brother, but I wish I had had those conversations with them. So it really was later in life, I think, that I really appreciated what my family had gone through. And I have read, you know, books from people, I think, of my generation that have written about, you know, what their family endured. And so it's interesting to read those stories too. But I think, you know, it says a lot about the strength of the Armenian people. We say, well, they're survivors. They really truly are. It's through those survivors, people who endured you know, atrocities and just such difficulty and tragedy in their life. They survived, came here, and then we've been able to thrive and succeed in our lives because of what our ancestors endured and survived. And so it really is a pretty amazing story that, again, I think I learned more in going to Armenia and then really starting to understand what happened.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that you have such a true appreciation of our culture and our ethnicity. And, you know, it's not that when you were younger, I'm sure in hindsight, you can say that, well, maybe I didn't really put so much attention or emphasis on my ethnicity or my background, and you should have done more. But to be honest with you, the fact that you just even recognize that, you probably in the back of your mind, you've always were so prideful of being an Armenian. And
oh, of course. And my family get togethers. And I think what's interesting is that I had the strongest connection with my maternal grandparents because my dad's parents were gone. So they never spoke about the genocide. It wasn't something that came up in conversation. Sure. They became US citizens, and they really, you know, embraced their life here. And I think that tragic part of their past was something they just didn't talk about. Obviously, when my cousin sat down and interviewed them, they did, but it wasn't something that came up or they dwelled on. And I think maybe that was how they coped with what happened to them. So it wasn't a part of our daily connections and contact.
Sure, of course. And it, you know, it's sobering to hear your story. Because even my grandparents on both my father's side and mother's side, unfortunately, my father's mother passed away when just before I turned the age of 2, where my sister has more of a recollection of our grandmother. But my father's father and my mom's parents, I know or knew very well. And on my father's side, his father's father, Charles Barosian, my great-grandfather, my father tells me he came to the United States in 1910. Mm. So around 1910, 1911, so right before the genocide. But there were already, to your point, and I would imagine it would reflect in the letters that you have, that there were already a lot of infighting and skirmishes happening, even as probably as early as 1895 and
right.
The turn of the century.
Yes.
And so really, it wasn't until 1915 that the crescendo of just everything just unfortunately unraveled, and 1.5 million of our, you know, fellow Armenians and, you know, people who came well before us, you know, perished and were persecuted and murdered and just brutally targeted in such a horrific and grotesque and just unbelievably, you know, condemning it in the highest terms that people right. were our fellow, you know, Armenians that they were just, you know, their land was taken away from them. Their, you know, the intelligence, the Armenian intellectuals were, you know, brutally murdered. And, you know, we're fortunate to have as a people, as, you know, a proud Armenian people to have survived all that. And that's what we are. We're survivors. And mm-hmm. you know, fortunately, I mean, for us, yes, we've been able to thrive in this country, be American citizens, and to be able to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. But at the same time, they had to go through so much struggle and heartache, and to have to, you know, do everything they possibly could to get to the United States, and to have 1.5 million Armenians to be killed by the Ottoman Turks. And still, Turkey to this day denies it. And thankfully, right. the federal government has, you know, and the Congress and the executive branch have formally recognized that the Armenian genocide, you know, was in fact a genocide. So when I think of just my family, like my father's side, he's more Americanized. I mean, being that I'm third generation on my father's side, his parents and grandparents really, you know, settled in America, or my dad was born here, his parents were born here on Long Island. But on my mom's side, I'm first generation. My mom and her family came from Jordan. They really were in Palestine. And interestingly, happening now with, you know, Israel and Gaza, what used to be, you know, Palestinian land, or what was called Palestine. My mom's two brothers were born in Palestine. My mom's parents had settled in Palestine. My mom's father was born in Adana, Turkey. So an Armenian family in Turkey, he came from means my mom's father's family. But, you know, in 1948, when Israel became a state, there was just a lot of chaos going on. And it wasn't until 1956 where, you know, my mom and her family were, you know, forced to leave. Anyone who was Palestinian or anyone who was being forced out, or and not just Palestinian, because we're Armenian, but there weren't Palestinians. There were Armenians. There were other people in that region who were forced out never to return again. And when my mom and her family immigrated to the U.S. in 1956, they already had sponsors. My mom's you know, brothers were already living in New Jersey, and and you had to have a family member who was a sponsor. So they were able to, under, I guess, our laws, you know, in our country, you know, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, with his policies, were able to get Armenians and other people, you know, from different parts of the world to emigrate to the U.S. and so, or immigrate rather to the U.S. And my mom just was somebody who, picture it, 4 years old, didn't speak any English. And, you know, she ended up going to kindergarten where only English was spoken, and she only spoke Armenian. And she was telling me that she cried, you know, on the first day of kindergarten. And her teacher had a profound impact on her, taught her English, you know, gave her, you know, the comfort, and was just like a calming voice and just a soothing presence for her in school. And that really is what my mom, you know, emulated. She wanted to become a school teacher, and she did. And she singles that time period of, you know, a teacher coming to her aid and wanting her to be able to assimilate and to be, you know, comfortable as possible, not speaking any English. And then by the time my mom got into the first grade, she was speaking English, you know, fine. And, you know, that's just a story that just came to mind. And I'm sure you can relate to stories like that, or what maybe your family has told you.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think both of my parents experienced that. They were born in the U.S., but they spoke Armenian at home. So when they went to kindergarten, they didn't speak English. And so they had to experience, I think, the same situation as your mom. So I think it was very important for them to assimilate. And I'm sure they struggled with that as well. They did speak about that too, that it was difficult. I'm glad that your mom had, I mean, what a great story that she had someone who really helped her and made her feel welcome, and what an impact it had on her. That's a wonderful story.
Yes, I mean, it certainly is. And, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, it worked out for our family members just growing up. And even though as American citizens, right, it's not easy sometimes to, you know, just grow up in life. I mean, you go through challenges, you go through obstacles and difficulties, and you have to take the positives with the negatives. But when you think about like family members of ours and ancestors who, you know, really had it much more difficult than we did. And that's why, again, I say to what I said earlier, that it is truly sobering when you think about just everything as a people that we had to go through. But I'm sure with these mission trips to Armenia, it really puts things into perspective, especially what's going on, you know, just with current events and just what's happening in that, you know, in that region, whether it's Armenia and still, you know, we see what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, like Ukraine, Armenia is a former, you know, Soviet bloc country, because right, it was Russia, not the United States, but it was Russia and France that really were the two countries that, you know, or at the time it was a Soviet Republic, I believe it was,
right, yes,
that they had to come to the aid of Armenians. And Armenians were able to, unfortunately, they had to lose their independence and they went under Soviet rule. But eventually in 1991, after the Soviet Union fell, you know, the USSR, you know, Armenians regained their independence. But still, even in the last 34 years of that independence, you know, you still, or what I've heard, I'm sure you can speak this having been to Armenia. I personally have not been yet, but I'm sure you can speak to the fact that although with 34 years of independence, the fact that, you know, Armenia still doesn't get along with the country of Georgia or Azerbaijan, I should say, and that there's,
yeah,
you know,
they're in a precarious position. With Turkey on one side and Azerbaijan on the other. I think there are friendly relations with Georgia and Iran. I'm I'm pretty sure. But yeah, I was there in 2023 as 120,000 Armenians were forced out of Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh. And the Azeris took control of that region, forcing these ethnic Armenians out and forcing them into the country of Armenia, which, you know, was a horrible situation to see, because these families were just had to drop everything, you know, piling as much as they could in terms of people and belongings into vehicles and just leaving an area, a region that you know, they had lived in there through the generations for centuries. And they were forced into Armenia. I happened to be there covering the medical mission when that occurred. And it was just so tragic to see that. And I think for many of the families that were forced out, they felt like they were being victimized again, like another genocide was taking place. And I think what's so sad is because of the precarious positioning geographically, and that they don't get a lot of sympathy, Armenia doesn't, from the rest of the world. And so a lot of things that happen there really go unnoticed, even by the United States or other countries. And it's just unfortunate to see that and very sad. You know, our country has, you know, our military base in Turkey there. It's a difficult situation, I think, for the United States to take sides a lot of times. And so I think Armenia is somewhat left to fend for themselves quite often. And it's sad. It's really sad to see that. And I definitely saw that happen in 2023.
Yeah, I almost wish that there would be some way from a foreign policy standpoint that, you know, being that it's very symbolic that, you know, as Armenians, Armenia is the first nation to adopt Christianity as its official
religion
in 1 AD.
It's a democracy, and it's it is a Christian nation, and it's a little pocket of Christianity, really, in that region. So it's almost amazing that it is still there. And I know some people worry that it could vanish at some day, but, you know, again, Armenians are survivors, and hopefully, you know, they'll continue to do so.
And I pray that that's not the case, that one day Armenia is no more. And thank God that we're, as a country, right? I mean, we're American citizens, we were born here. But, you know, when you look to Armenia, it's still where our ancestors came from, you know, for some just decades ago, for others hundreds of years ago, and others beyond that. I mean, 150, a couple hundred years. But the point I'm trying to make is that we are survivors, and, you know, we're known for incredible things, a lot of innovations, a lot of talent, and a lot of intelligence, and a lot of, you know, being able to just make an impact on this world for various things and in so many different professions. And so the fact, as the symbolism of being the first Christian nation, and given that the U.S. Was really founded on, you know, Judeo-Christian values, you know, I would hope that maybe one day in the future, you know, and this is just my opinion, and I don't know if others share it, but, you know, that America can get closer to Armenia and rethink maybe having bases in Turkey and to move those bases to the U.S. But that's a whole different discussion of policy, and that's not really what's discussed every day, but I'm sure they talk about it in the federal government from time to time, you know, from a strategic standpoint. But, you know, I pray that better days are ahead for Armenians over there, and, you know, for us Armenians here at home in America, just very prideful, because that resilience, that perseverance, that strength, that unity, that can-do attitude. You know, survival is the operative word. I mean, it really is about survival. I just wish that it didn't take a genocide to, you know, have us feel that, you know, we're still in some way, shape, or form, that we, Armenians, I do believe that we're forgotten still in some respects. I think that the advent of technology and social media, and that there are influencers, and that there are a lot of Armenians who are more in the limelight or in the public space, where they can have their platforms and talk about issues that matter to Armenians here in America, in Armenia, and other places where there are Armenians, because Armenians are on six continents around the world. And there's about, I would say, maybe 11, 12 million of us, maybe a little bit more. If spread out around the world, so smaller population compared to a lot of many other cultures and ethnicities. But I'm just glad, I'm sure you can share, you know, that gladness, if you will, that we are still talked about, and that I hope that carries on into the future, that more will be discussed about our people and what we have to go through, and really to shape future generations and being prepared of what life is like as an Armenian, and to be prideful and to be proud of our people, our history, and what we've accomplished.
Yeah. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And it is a wonderful country. I've really enjoyed visiting when I've gone there. It's beautiful. It's so interesting. And I hope I'll have opportunities to continue to visit. I would encourage you to go too. It really is a wonderful place to visit. There's a lot to see. It's been a highlight for me to have those chances, and my kids need to go too. So hopefully they can do that at some point.
Yes. We were talking offline the other day about your kids, and you know, you have your son in LA and your daughter in the New York metropolitan area with her husband, and you know, they're doing well in their careers. Like, what does it mean to have, you know, your children, to see them grow up, to see them successful in careers, to be a mom? And you talk about like female empowerment or woman empowerment in the workplace, but just to be a mother, to raise children and with your husband, and to see them flourish. I mean, I'm sure it means a lot to you and your husband.
Oh, of course it does. And I'd like to think that they saw an example of a strong woman in me. I mean, that's what I tried to be strong, I guess, have a good work ethic. I definitely was there for them. I believe that my kids know they were a priority, certainly in my life. And I love seeing my daughter, who I believe is also a strong woman, and my son, who he is seeing someone who's, I think, a strong woman. So I'm glad that they're making the choices that they've made in their lives. And yeah, I'm, of course, very proud of them. They make me proud every single day. And I think when you know, Garrett, I know you have a young son, and as you see your children grow, I know you will be proud of how your children turn out. It's a real accomplishment. It's probably the greatest accomplishment in life. You know, I did things in my job that I'm very proud of, but probably the greatest accomplishment has been, you know, raising my kids, seeing what they have become, what they're becoming. That gives me a great source of pride, and will continue to do so. That's what's most important.
Well, that's wonderful. And I'm so glad to hear you say that. And I'm very pleased to hear you say that, because a lot of my guests, especially my guests who are females, you know, who are mothers and had to raise their children, have said that, you know, their greatest accomplishments were raising their children. And the males and the men on my podcast have, you know, who have families and who have kids, have said the same things. It's interesting perspective, you know, from a man versus a woman about what your kids mean, because it's going to be similar. You know, a husband and wife, a father and a mother are going to have their perspectives, and they're very similar. But the role of a mother has, you know, a place in society. A role of a father has a place in society. And together, when you have the husband and wife, strong nucleus in a house, and, you know, faith, and especially Armenians are very close, and, you know, we're a very strong ethnic group, that you're going to raise your kids with traditional values and good values, and teach them right versus wrong, and to be good model citizens. And just to hear from you how your kids have turned out and the types of citizens they've become. And I know that you and your husband did an excellent job as parents, and, you know, we're all not perfect, and we want to be here for our kids as much as possible. We want to make sure we don't miss any of the special moments. And I know that for my wife, Angela, and I, you know, to have our 2.5-year-old son, Peter, who, you know, God willing, my wife and I, we plan to have more children, but just to see the growth and development of our son has been truly special. And, you know, my wife being Italian-Irish, we talk about visiting Italy, you know, she knows as a, you know, 100% Armenian that, you know, seeing Armenia one day would be truly special. So she's like, maybe we can go to Yerevan for a few days. And I'm like, that would be great. You know, we just got to find the time to do it. And
right. It's a long travel trip.
It is. And the priest here in Orlando, his name is Father Perrin. He's the priest in the Orlando church here in Florida. He had told me the other day at a church that one of his good friends from seminary school lives in Yerevan, and he would be more than happy to give us a tour when we're there. So, you know, feeling comfortable that we would know somebody through the church. And obviously you being there many times, I'm sure you might be able to guide us on like where good places to visit or just, you know, places to check out. But, you know, this has been wonderful. I really appreciate the time, Stephanie, and to have you on my podcast and to make the connection between you and Wisdom and Mike. But that is one aspect of your life being at KC24 for 42 years, but to talk about our culture, talk about family, to talk about role models, to talk about our journalism, our journalistic profession. And so I just want to thank you again for being my 69th guest on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. Any final thoughts about relationship building as we depart from our interview?
Well, I think we have different, you know, relationships through the course of our lives. When we're young, it's with our parents, with our family. And then in the workplace, relationships, having good relationships with coworkers is so important. That was always important for me to get along well. I'm not a perfect person. I'm sure not everyone maybe enjoyed working with me, but I always try to, you know, get along well with people that I work with. I knew that was important. And, you know, now that I'm not in the workplace anymore, it kind of shifts back to families and friends. And so our relationships evolve through the years, but having good relationships with the people that are a part of our lives at the different stages in our lives is very important. So I value those relationships, and I always have.
Yes, and I wanted to mention, because part of my guest list are guests who are Emmy Award winners, and you're an Emmy Award winning journalist at KC24. So I wanted to mention that so my audience knows that you're very accomplished in our journalistic profession. And again, I want to thank you again for your time, Stephanie. My distant relative in Fresno, California, Stephanie Berugian, always a pleasure. And I look forward to having many more conversations in the future and talking about traveling to Armenia, maybe giving me some advice for my wife and me and son one day, hopefully when we make it out there.
Anytime. Thank you, Garrett.
You're welcome. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.